It's the Pod Medic Podcast for November 19th, 2014. We're thankful that you're listening.
Yay.
Thanks, Craig.
Pop Medic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Brian, and joining me today are
Jeremy,
Mike,
Amanda,
Bill.
In honor of Turkey Day, we're going to tell you what we're thankful for, most of which has something to do with the library, or maybe not. In a twist, I'm actually going to go first today. What I am most thankful for is the Special Collections Department. Without them, we couldn't do this podcast. They let us use their awesome soundproof interview room, and they let us use their very expensive pro-grade microphones and recorders. If you remember when we first started to go once a week, the podcast sounded pretty bad, and now it sounds a little bit better. It's because...
It's because...
We're using their very good equipment, which they use to record oral histories and actually record and preserve.
We make fart jokes.
Yes. Yes.
That's range right there.
That's right.
They record and preserve the history of the city and the people that live in it, and we do what Mike said we do.
We're just passing through.
So passing
gas through.
I mean, they have these really comfy chairs in their special collection center that are, not only they're comfy, that they don't make noise. I mean, they're like, you know, we're improvising here as far as having a recording studio.
It's fine Corinthian
like,
leather.
You know, the chairs are comfy and quiet. It's just like, without them, this would be terrible. So it's better. And then maybe more related to popular materials or popular things or things you get from the library, I'm really thankful that we got VU Find, which... most of you listeners who are patrons just kind of know as the card catalog when you go to our website, like what it looks like. And what I'm really super excited about, the feature that VU Find has now, are those little sliders that tell you about the new materials, the little slider that has everything that's new, and you can just browse the cover. We have wanted that for years and years, and we finally got it, and it's awesome, and I know it's increasing the circulation on things. You know, really savvy patrons know to, like, put things on order early, but you can see when the cover of a new book or a new movie hits one of those sliders, the holds list jumps up, so you know that people are looking at them. I know that I look at them. My holds queue has expanded because of those little sliders that, you know, that show the new materials. And anywhere you are in the catalog, like up in the top left, there's a button that says browse catalog.
Okay, yeah.
So you'll get new movies, new fiction, new nonfiction, new anime, manga, and graphic novels, sometimes also known as comic books.
Yes.
And new children's books you. That you can browse through. That is what I am thankful for. What you got, Mr. Estes?
Well, on the library tip, I am in a new workplace this year, and I'm very grateful for that. But I'm also grateful for all the folks who made my old workplace a nice place to be. And I'm also thankful for the new people who are also old people
Where's that, Sonny?
Who are me?
Are you mentioning me? Let me turn on my hearing aid.
Hopefully they better make it a good place for me to be, too, because I really went out of my way to change my whole life. I'm joking.
No pressure.
I'm joking. No pressure.
Whoa.
No, I'm grateful to be back down here in this big, weird building. And then on a materials tip, I want to talk about a song that I think is the greatest song of all time. And I recently rediscovered my love for it and how much I think it is the greatest song of all time. So I'm thankful for the song Surfin' Bird by the Trash Men.
Oh, well, everybody's heard about the bird. Bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. Bird is a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. Well, the bird is a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. Well, the bird is a winner. Well, the bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird, bird, bird. Well, the bird is a winner. Well, the bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, don't you know about the bird? Well, everybody knows that the bird is a winner. Well, the bird.
And I want you to know it is the greatest song of all time. Out of every song that has ever been written, it's the best one.
Wow.
It conquers all hits, hymns, dirges, madrigals, and sea shanties across all genres for all time. And why is it so great? So let's compare it to the Pantheon. It doesn't feature the beautiful harmonies of the Beach Boys, the verbal gymnastics of Bob Dylan, or the tunefulness of the Beatles. What it is repetitive and silly, and so much so that my kid heard it one time, memorized it, and then requested it whenever we had music playing anywhere, no matter what the song was. And while I'm certain this is not the author's intent, and it was written by more than one person, which, if you've ever heard it, is sort of a funny thing to think about. It was boiled down from a mashup of two songs by a group, vocal group called the Rivingtons. There was two songs called Papa Oom Mau Mau and Bird's the Word. And both of those are pretty standard, if silly, R&B tunes from the early 1960s. I don't think this was their intent, but I think Surfing Bird is almost like an anti-song or anti-music even, a song which points out the absolute absurdity and futility of the idea of even trying to write a song. So, like, if you want to express your love for someone in a song, that's dumb. You have a piece of music for prepared piano or 4 minutes of silence. Surfing Bird is going to kill you, leave you in the dust, and it reached number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart in 1963.
Number 4.
That's right. Number 4. A bullet. And I am thankful for its simplicity, for its absurdity, and for its longevity. I am thankful for the bird.
So I have to tell you the Surfing Bird story. So you know Peter Griffin sang it on
Family Guy. Yeah.
So that was like the first episode my husband and I watched when we were dating. Oh, wow. Family Guy was that episode. Yeah. And so Surfing Bird done by Peter Griffin was his ringtone when I would call him.
Oh, God.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yes. So it really is the best song ever. Right.
See?
Wow. Meanwhile, that episode ruined the song for me. So I never, just thinking about it, fills me with rage.
Fantastic.
So every time I called my husband when we were dating,
see?
It was Peter Griffin, Surfing Bird.
It is the great, it does, it brings people together. It drives people away.
And Stanley Kubrick was supposedly obsessed with the song.
That's
he
right.
put in Full Metal it's Jacket.
In Full Metal Jacket, that's
great
right.
Lines.
He called it fascinating.
It is fascinating. See? I'm on to something here. There's a book in this.
So, Bird is the Word.
The Bird is the Word.
If we ever do the best all time ever, I think we have your music pick.
That's right. This is my best.
Ooh, that could be fun.
I don't like to make bold proclamations about that sort of stuff because I usually walk the fence on stuff, but I think I might have settled on this being the. It's not necessarily my favorite song of all time, but I think that it is the greatest.
Don't backtrack now.
I'm not backtracking. It is the greatest song
he just,
of all times.
He wants to have it both ways.
I wrote a song myself called You Can't Have It Both Ways.
Not as good as Surfing Bird.
Not as good as
Surfing
Bird. It's not as simple.
What are you thankful for, Mike?
Oh, I'm in this podcast? I thought I was just hanging out.
What's the word, Mike?
It's definitely not bird. So, yeah, I thought I'd talk about something that I think is really neat and I'm thankful for, that whenever I tell somebody I'm a librarian, inevitably the person I'm talking to mentions that some book that they had trouble finding that, like, you know, hey, would you guys happen to have something from 40 years ago, whatever? And I suggested to them that we might actually have it because we have over a million items. Or perhaps they should try something called Interlibrary Loan.
That's my favorite.
Spoiler, that'll be coming up later. I've recommended Interlibrary Loan to everyone, family members, friends, strangers, that snobby jerk on the bus. Basically, catalogs in most libraries on Earth are connected through an organization called OCLC, which I didn't bother to look up what the acronyms for, so you have to look it up. However, if the book that you want is only available from, like, England or Canada, you'll probably be out of luck ordering it. You can request a book from their website. The link's to our ILL department. Ooh. And you can select which branch it'll go to. It arrives somewhere in the neighborhood of a week to a month later. You know, the last book that I requested took so long that I forgot I had requested it.
But we got it.
Yeah, no, it came in.
Uh-huh. You're not alone.
I'll let the casual rage. I have a feeling that I'll never get anything again.
Library use only, my friend. Library use
no. I saw that's an option.
If it took a long time just to explain the process, and Amanda, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. That means that, you know, you search, like, libraries that are close, and then you search farther and farther away. So it had to come from far, far away.
From Alaska, yeah. Which we do.
Wow.
So it takes longer.
That's cool. Note that I thought the idea of ILL was for academic purposes only. I had, of course, seen the ILL desk at the library when I was in college, but never used it because I just kind of assumed that, you know, if I went up there and asked for some old-timey new wave science fiction book, they'd laugh me out of the building.
But,
still might.
No, you just judge me when you bring stuff over.
I requested a book called Abortion Arcade. I didn't get judged that I know.
Whoa.
Of.
You know of.
I don't know if I go to that arcade.
Well, you can't anymore.
So. Did it have Pac-Man?
If you're ready, you know, if you press for player one, does it come up? Story time. I thought I'd mention that, you know, like a book that I tried reading 20 years ago and actually lost it, you know, in the middle of reading it, called Deus Ex by Norman Spinrad. You know, obviously it's way out of print, and I got it through ILO within about a couple weeks, and it's one of the best books I read this year. Yay. Thanks, ILO. And of course, Pop Addict podcaster Amanda is the current head of ILO. Thank you, Amanda. Thank you for crossing our frosty basement to hand deliver my weird dystopian fiction until recently. I guess I'll have to actually go upstairs to get it.
Yeah.
Sad face.
That's okay.
Thanks, Panda.
Yeah. You're so happy. I'd like to thank the Academy. Yeah, so we do get a lot of stuff through ILL, and the best one that I don't even remember the book was that you got, but there was one book that he got that I walked over to him, and in the back all it said in big letters was "Science Bad." So that's how I handed it to him.
Yeah.
It's like, here you go, Science Bad.
Amanda, good.
That's right. Okay. And we do try not to judge, but there are some things.
So not when you worked in ILL, but when I first started working here, I just wanted to establish a baseline about what it was like going to be working with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I put in some very interesting ILL requests. But at the time, some of which we could get, it didn't. I can't remember who worked in ILL at the time. I think it was Meg.
And Ben, maybe?
Meg and Ben and Jesse Moros.
Yeah.
Jesse Moros. Who used to be on the podcast. Got some interesting ILL, like the first 2 weeks I worked here.
But see, now that, I mean, I know you now, and so, like, if you put a request in, I'd be like, who is this? Oh, it's Brian.
Oh, it must be Brian.
I'm like, okay, we can't get that, but okay.
I love it. I've gotten many quality materials from there.
I never put in a request for Abortion Arcade.
That's true. I'm, touche. I think you win the award for, like, you know, stuff I wouldn't touch.
It was, like, some, like publisher that, like, they published, like, extreme schlock science fiction.
Oh, is this like bizarro fiction?
Yeah, bizarro.
Okay,
fiction. Yeah. I read
yeah.
some articles.
There's some stuff
about
I cannot
it.
Say in this podcast. But yeah. Yes. They've got some.
It just sounded awesome. That seems.
I have
like
a fistful of feet. Yeah. Is a bizarro book.
That seemed like the least offensive one. So I was like,
yeah.
A teaser for best books. I know one of the authors that I think I'm going to talk about for my best books of the year picks has a couple books under that press.
Yeah.
That publishes a lot of those. Mm-hmm. What were you thankful for, Amanda?
The All Tangent episode.
I'm thankful for get to see all the different titles that people have been alone. All right. I am thankful for a book that has been, finally reading a book that has been on my to-be-read pile for like ever and ever and ever. And I don't know why it took me so long to read it, because it's like 100 pages, which for me is like 20 minutes of work. So I'm going to talk about Anne Lamott's Help, Thanks, Wow. She had realized, Anne Lamott, you know, is a writer, and she's written a bunch of other books about writing, and she realized that, you know, all of her prayers could be broken down into these three categories, help, pray, or wow. And I really love her definition of prayer in general. She says that prayers should be kept simple, and it's not meant for display purposes like sushi or, you know, plastic sushi or neon. Prayer is private, and it's a communication from the heart to that which surpasses understanding, which I thought that was a very classy definition. I would imagine that we are all experts in the help prayers, you know, help make me more money or help me find my missing sock. But if you're anything like me, we could probably use a little bit more work on the whole thing. Thank you thing, you know, especially going into the upcoming holiday season of Thanksgiving and, you know, into Christmas and New Year's. You know, in the spirit of today's theme, I would like to give a shout out and say thank you to our shipping department. And as Mike mentioned, I do run interlibrary loan, which means I'm shipping a lot of things in and out. Like, I get incoming books for our patrons. We loan books to other libraries as well, because it's kind of a reciprocal deal. If you're going to borrow, then you should be able to lend, too. And our poor shipping guys have to deal with the large amounts of mail that I send. And without them, you know, we wouldn't be able to offer interlibrary loan, because, you know, as much as I love our patron, I'm not going to drive to Alaska to get a book for you. Maybe Florida, especially in the winter, because I could go to the beach a little, but I'm not going to the Pacific Northwest. So Mark, Ron, James, and Tony, and everybody else who helps out down on the loading dock, thank you for all your heavy lifting, both literally and figuratively. All right, Mr. Bill.
On November 5th, 2014, former Nashville Library employee Nancy Sellers passed away, and I'm thankful I got to know her and work with her. I'm not going to talk about years of service or any of that jazz. I'm just going to tell quick stories such as One day, Nancy asked me about this movie she went to see. She couldn't think of the title, and she said the movie started with a woman getting a mask full of spikes hammered into her face. Well, I knew.
That sounds like Nancy's commitment. Yeah.
I automatically knew what she was talking about. It was Mario Bava's 1960 Italian gothic horror film, Black Sunday. I said, "You've seen Black Sunday?" And Nancy said, "Oh, yeah, I saw it when it was first released at the old Englewood Theater. How cool is that?" Also, Nancy just did her work and was always willing to help. And when we first automated to computers, Nancy was one of the teachers who showed everybody the way. And here's another story. Nancy was on vacation, and circulation called to ask when we were getting the new books from the shelf, because the shelves were overflowing. To make a long story short, Nancy was the only one who got the new books, and she wasn't there, so there was a backlog. She did little things. She did all the small stuff to help everything run efficiently. The main thing I want to tell you about Nancy Sellers is she was not a well woman. She had serious health issues. I won't go into all of it, just take my word. And you know, I never heard her complain or whine about her situation, not a whimper. This was the cards that life dealt her, and she played them. And when I think back on working with Nancy, I would like to quote Dr. Seuss, "Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened." I'm thankful for the important life lessons she gave me.
When I started at the library, Nancy taught me everything about the library, like how to do like all the actual things, like work that you actually do at the library, and how it works, and what to do, and how to do it, and how to use Millennium. Millennium is our software. Like, she taught me all of that.
My Nancy story is when I would usually work nights and weekends, and I would usually work with Nancy. And it never failed that every night, right at closing, she would disappear. She was not a large woman. She was teeny tiny. I don't know where she would go. So I would just kind of call out, "Bye, Nancy."
Tickling My Fancy is Doctor Who Season 8, which you can now watch on demand, and the Nashville Public Library has supposedly ordered Season 8, and it's due December 9th, 2014. The season is over, but I like to watch Doctor Who on demand. That way I can kind of watch them in a row. I really enjoy the new Doctor, played by Peter Capaldi, and his new companion, Clara Oswald, played by the super cute Jenna Coleman. And she is cute. So Season 8 has a darker tone, which I appreciate. And the new Doctor is my age. Well, he's a couple of years older, so that's kind of fun. So give Doctor Who Season 8 a chance.
I should have spoiled a little of that so you could mute that so my husband can't hear that. Because he loves Doctor Who, and it's not my favorite. So.
Oh. I haven't seen any of it, but I've been looking forward to seeing it.
Any of Season 8 or any of Doctor Who?
Any of Season 8. I guess I've watched the last couple, but I need to go back and start and just watch all of it.
I liked old school Who, but I kind of got bored with the recent Who about 3 seasons in. So
I actually like the old stuff better, too.
Yeah.
Brian called me a classicist the other day. Yes, that's true.
Modernist,
classicist. Yeah, Tom Baker for life.
Yeah, Tom. Yeah, he's a great actor.
I just want to throw out related. Peter, what's the guy's last name?
Capaldi.
He did a really good job. He played John Frobisher in that Torchwood miniseries that I've had nerd spasms about on the podcast before. On Torchwood, Children of Earth, which was like series 3 of Torchwood, he was basically the lead character. He was great in that. I was actually kind of surprised that they cast him as Doctor Who because like he's...
Yeah. I thought they were skewing younger with the Doctors Who. I mean, the last one I was older than.
Yeah.
Which was freakish to me, because as a kid, you know, they were always like dead figures.
It's a baby time travel, so.
Yeah,
I just thought it was kind of weird, because he was such a big, I guess, you know, it's like Torchwood is an anagram of Doctor Who, right? It's just like, how can we have more stuff in the Doctor Who universe? He was such a big character in like that whole series. I was surprised that they cast him as Doctor Who, but.
He was also in one of my favorite local hero. If you've ever seen that with Burt Lancaster and Peter Riggit, it's a great movie. You should watch it.
You know, bridging the Doctor Who eras, I think he, in a lot of ways, just the way he looks, I think he is kind of a throwback cast to the older Doctors.
Yeah, he looks kind of like the third John Pertwee.
Yeah, that kind of Victorian Edwardian outfit.
Anybody like Sylvester McCoy?
I like Peter Cushing. Nah. You know, Tom Baker, John Pertwee, good stuff.
I know that Peter Cushing was Doctor Who in the very first Doctor Who movie.
Yes.
I got your reference.
High five across the table.
We had those movies. Yeah. I remember checking them out watching
Doctor Who and the Daleks.
And then there's Invasion Earth 2025 or something like
that. Something like that, yeah. 2055.
Yeah.
Amanda.
And now for something really different.
Hey, guys.
Well, so this podcast is going to air before Thanksgiving, and so we're in that time of year that it's, you know, the holiday season, if you will. But my question is, so Halloween is over. We haven't yet had Thanksgiving. But my question is, and I want you guys to weigh in on this, when should the Christmas season officially begin? Because there are Christmas music out. I saw the Jingle Bells commercial on TV the other day.
Oh, really? With the Hershey's Kisses?
Yeah, the one that's been out since I was four.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, when they have the Doctor Who Christmas
December 25th.
Because for me, mine would be when Santa Claus comes at the end of the Macy's Parade. Then it's Christmas.
That's Thanksgiving?
Yes. That's my official demarcation.
I think that is acceptable. I would personally prefer to see it pushed back to like December 15th. Or at least December 1st.
No Christmas music until December 15th?
I think
Scrooge.
December. I personally don't. Christmas and me have not been pals for a long time. But I think... I think
Charlie Brown.
I think if it's not after Thanksgiving, then it's not...
So
it's
right now it's too soon.
It's way too soon.
So the stuff that came out in July, too soon.
When you go to Target and you see the Halloween stuff, and then right pushed there in the back, on October 1st when all the Halloween stuff is there or whenever, and then there's like a reindeer and some lights and stuff. That is too soon. And I realize stores got to get their stuff in or whatever. But
that was the inspiration behind Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
Some people are already in line for Black Friday at a Best Buy.
Day after Thanksgiving. There, we're done.
Like the Black Friday-ness of, that's your pick for Christmas.
Yeah, that's what, you know, that's where we put up our trees. I've got an itty-bitty tree that I have in my house, and nice. I can live with that. Yeah, when they start in July or something, that just fills me with rage. Yeah.
it's not special if it starts.
If it's like 6 months of the year.
I don't want to hear that song again.
Exactly.
I heard Baby It's Cold Outside in Provence 2 weeks ago.
Oh, man.
And I know that's not a specifically...
Is it 75 degrees outside? Yeah. Exactly. You heard it, you're like, no.
I mean, that is not a Christmas song because they don't say Christmas, but it's associated with Christmas.
Did you say what was tickling your fancy?
That was my point. All my friends and I have been having this discussion. It's like, it's too soon. It's not too soon. And then I saw the Jingle Bells commercial on TV, and I'm like, nope, it's too soon.
I was waiting for you to like give a link to a survey, but
survey.
But no, now I understand. I'm a little, not the carrot with the most vitamin A. I was like still waiting for like, and then you could go to this. I waited for like you can go to Macy's website and take the. I'm like, why do you think it's too soon to decorate your Christmas tree?
If you would take a survey, feel free to post it in the comments on our podcast.
That's right. I like that Jingle Bells commercial. There's a Fruity Pebbles commercial that. Is from way back.
Yes.
But they don't play.
I don't know that one.
I look it up on YouTube every year for Christmas because it's like there's a Santa Claus comes to Fred Flintstone's house and he says something yabba dabba fruity licious do and there's like this ho 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 I'm hungry.
He's the sweetest in our souls.
The only fruity pebbles in our bowls. Oh, here comes you know who. Yabba dabba fruity licious do. Ho 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 I'm hungry. Santa, my pebbles!
Your pebbles!
'Tis the season to be sharing, Fred.
Happy holidays, pal.
Oh, Fred. Fruity and Cocoa Pebble cereals, part of this nutritious breakfast.
I
have to mention mine, the Channel 5 with the two kids walking. It's an animated thing. Surely you've seen it. When I was a kid, I'm serious. This was done locally, animator on Channel 5.
I'm not local.
And they're walking and they're looking at the toys through the window. They show it every year. Uh-huh. It's a News Channel 5. That's cool. It has to be. Yeah, it has to be 50 years.
Wow.
So, tickling my fancy this week is that by the time this episode plops, the video game Dragon Age Inquisition will be out, and I am excited!
I just want to say how good your segue was.
Excellent. Segue was amazing.
Keep going.
Dragon Age Origins was one of my favorite games of the last console generation, introducing new ideas into the fantasy RPG genre that weren't just ripoffs of D&D. I had a wonderful time immersing myself in a vaguely medieval European setting over the course of a month or two. I really liked that everything had a kind of analog in the real world. It was pretty neat. Again, maybe as a history buff, kind of nerd out, it's like, ooh, it's supposed to be, you know, this is the Byzantine Empire, or this is, you know, what's left of, you know, this is the Holy Roman Empire. Cool. Both different names. Cool. My magic. Dragon Age 2 was worth the $5 I paid for it. The story's kind of meh, the acting was good, the lousy visuals, but this time, I'm hoping that Dragon Age Inquisition will correct the mistakes of both Dragon Age 2 and Mass Effect 3, present a okay story for a video game. You know, hopefully better than the last one, but you know, it's a video game, my hopes aren't very high. And really good visuals, oh boy, oh boy. This time, the whole game is set in the Empire of Orde, the France/Holy Roman Empire analog. Dragon Age 2 ended with the sexy rogue from Dragon Age Origins, Leliana, as a High Inquisitor. And I'm really curious to see what's going on with her, because, you know, in my game, I quote-unquote hardened her, or tempted her to leave her high holy path for one with sexy results. So I'm curious to see, like, what's happened to her. I thought I'd also mention that we have a book that presumably sets some of the backstage background of Inquisition called Dragon Age The Masked Empire by Patrick Weeks. It's next in my reading queues. I haven't actually read it yet. But I've read one Dragon Age book before, thanks ILL, and found it to easily be the best video game novelization I've ever read. Seriously, this one was actually good, as in, like, I would recommend it to people who have don't play the game. So I have high hopes for this book and the game. Dragon Age, good stuff.
There's an episode of Tabletop where they play the Dragon Age tabletop role-playing game with the guy that designed the game.
Cool. What do you got, Jeremy?
So last week you were talking about Babylon 5, and that made me think about the year that I spent watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and my aborted attempt at starting to watch Star Trek Voyager after Deep Space Nine, and so I decided to rekindle that warp drive and started it up. I got my dilithium crystals.
Yeah.
I got a tachyon field and put a subspace relay to it and started up watching it. And I had watched three episodes. I rewatched those first three episodes and I enjoy it. I don't love it so far, but I'm going to keep plowing ahead just like the Voyager's doing and see where it takes me. I've talked to Brian a little bit about it because he's watched the show. So I know there's some bright spots in it down the road.
There's one episode I saw that was actually really good.
I've heard there are great episodes.
Every other one I've seen.
Yeah.
Voyager is Janeway, right?
Voyager is Janeway. Okay. So it's got a lot going for it, but Brian was talking about budgets. And I think maybe the franchise was sort of out of steam at that point, too. I was trying in vain to probably get a girlfriend at that time, so that watching those shows probably wouldn't have helped. So
I just assumed I'd be forever alone, so I watched it anyway. I gave up early. Yeah.
I've watched all those shows with my partner in their entirety.
That's excellent.
We do gender bent cosplay of Star Trek characters. That's what we did for our anniversary a few years ago. It's actually, I apologize, Amanda, that's actually why I wasn't at your wedding.
Priorities,
because
you know.
That was our anniversary plan, like planned in way in advance. So.
Well, I think that's beautiful.
So. That's okay. My husband loves Star Trek, so he would appreciate that.
My wife was, every time when I started watching Deep Space Nine, especially the bad early episodes, she would walk by and just laugh and like, what is this stupid thing? And then she would walk by and she's like, what happened? What's she doing? Oh, is that so-and-so doing the thing? And then by the end of it, I couldn't finish watching it because she's like, you have to wait for me. So maybe this will happen again because she's already like sitting down sort of like, well, who's that person? So she already is familiar with that world a little bit. So
I like Janeway.
Yeah.
I didn't watch all of Voyager with him when he was watching it. But
yeah. Well, another part of that, too, was that I had been listening to the audiobook of Joe Hill's Nosferatu and Kate Mulgrew reads it. Ooh. And so she kind of like goes really like there's some pretty overboard
that Janeway-esque like
it's just like she's just really like she's like yelling at some parts and cool. Screaming and I'm like driving down the road.
Crash your
it's
car.
Just kind of amazing.
That's my audiobook, but sir. I didn't mean to.
That's pretty great. So I thought, man, I should give old Voyager a chance again.
And she's on that I haven't seen it, that hot Netflix series, Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, she plays like a Russian in a prison or something.
Yeah, that's right.
She's, if Janeway was a middle-aged Russian prisoner in an American prison, it's... Yeah.
Exactly.
So she has a lot of range. Or something.
She's the cook, but she's like the boss of her gang.
Did she win an award for that, an Emmy or something like that?
She might have. I mean,
maybe she was nominated.
She's good in a role. In general, you know, she's kind of like the Iron Lady of the Star Trek universe. Mm-hmm. People always say that, like, she's like on as Janeway, she's very like Margaret Thatcher-esque. And I've heard the other actors say that on set she was like the boss of the show. Her mood like set the tone for everyone, like whole cast any given day. So I wasn't surprised, but she was cast as one of the gang leaders on Orange Is the New Black, that she's screaming when she reads audiobooks.
I mean, I think a different reader would have been a little more reserved, but she was like probably like you were talking about adjusting our levels earlier. Like they were probably. Yeah, having to turn her stuff down.
Moving the mic into the next
dude! She's like screaming into the...
It's kind of interesting. She was not the first choice for Janeway. Yeah. It was actually Genevieve Bugeaud of Coma and Anne of a Thousand Days, Canadian actress.
Yeah.
And just on the first day, it just didn't work out at all. She didn't like the schedule, you know, because it's insane schedules on Star Trek.
Sure.
And she was kind of like, just the last minute, you know, hey, can you do this part? That's so does how there, she got Janeway.
Yeah, I heard that she quit like the first day or
first
something.
First day,
yeah. Uh-huh. I heard about that. Yeah.
And Leonard Nimoy came to defense. I said, I really can't blame her because it's such a bear of a schedule. Huh. You said you really have to have a total. If you didn't have to do it, she said, I wouldn't do it either.
You know, it was one of those, I just always got the impression, too, that maybe she was sort of this very artistic actress. And
she's, like, slumming it by doing science fiction.
And one of the, if you know anything about the Star Trek TV shows, it was carpentry, right? it was nuts and bolts, man, and really out of clip. So if you wanted to, get into your zone, you didn't have a lot of time to do it.
Well, her character almost speaks like some of the secondary characters who babble all the technical jargon about different ionization fields and all this stuff, you know? Because, like, she kind of... I don't remember where I read it, but someone was talking about if you had a capacity for saying that sort of dialogue about the different technical stuff, to make it sound like you know what you were talking about, even though you don't know what you're talking about, that they would give you all those lines. But she, I guess, in the three episodes that I've seen, she's been very hands-on in the science stuff.
Speaking of strong women, what tickled my fancy is that Taylor Swift pulled all our songs off Spotify. No, I'm just kidding.
So did Jason Aldean.
Did he for real?
Yeah.
You know, the artists that have done that so far can do so because they have the economic luxury to do that.
Okay.
That isn't what's tickling my fancy, but that is interesting. I can remember when Tom York did that with his back catalog, everyone gave him crap about it, or at least some pundits, and now Taylor Swift has done it. So it's an interesting development. That isn't what is tickling my fancy, but what is tickling my fancy is another strong woman. Maybe it's because Jeremy's back and he's a comic book guy, or it's because the micification of the podcast, or but the fact that I just went to GMX, I was like, I need to read some comics again. I mean, some mainstream superhero comics, none of this arty, good paper garbage. So,
good paper. Icon, you know, in the trash. Yeah, Vertigo in the trash.
So just on a whim, I pulled like the first couple volumes of Wonder Woman on DC's New 52. You know, a couple years back, DC rebooted their universe.
Kind of, sort of, mostly.
So I've started with Wonder Woman, and it's written by Brian Azzarello, who was an interesting choice because he was really known for doing this very dark, hard-boiled noir series, 100 Bullets. And he won a lot of awards for that. And, like, the direction on Wonder Woman is actually totally different. It's all about mythology. It starts with Hera and Zeus and Hermes and... the fact that Wonder Woman is Diana, if you didn't know that, maybe that's a spoiler. So that's what the whole first volume is about. And what I really like about it, though, is the art by Cliff Chiang. And it's just very heavy line. It's very flat. It's almost like cell animation, not quite. And I just like what he does. And even if you don't want to read the comics, if you're not going to read Wonder Woman comics, I'll put a link to his website. He has, like, all the covers that he did for the series and all these posters, all these Wonder Woman one-pagers. And they're cool. Like, he's really knocking it out of the park. So the new 52 Wonder Woman by Brian Azzarello, Cliff Chiang, and I think Tony Atkins did some too, but I don't like his pages as much as Chiang's. Now, it just so happens that I just picked this up on a whim to try some superhero comics because I've been out of that world for so long. But it just so happened just, you know, right about now, this new book just came out, The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore, which is, a history of the character, but also a biography of the gentleman that created the character, who was kind of a nutcase.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
He was an interesting dude. Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably too late for me to read that and really love it and put it on my end of the year list. And I'm on the bottom of the holds list now, but maybe I'll report back later.
We've got it on Overdrive. I'm on the list for that. The list is not as long.
So we'll see. We'll see. The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore. That's will be tickling my fancy in the future. How about corrections?
I actually have some corrections today.
Yeah, because you know what? I was going to say no corrections, whoop. So
what did we get wrong?
Oh, you wrecked it.
Oh, no. Oh.
What did we get wrong?
I destroyed our streak. Well, I only wrote down stuff that I got wrong, so Okay. Everybody else is off the hook. Harlan Ellison wrote 2 episodes of Babylon 5 and was a voice in 2 others. I said that he'd only was an exceptional consultant and was an actor in 1 episode. J. Michael Straczynski wrote all of seasons 3 and 4, not, 2, 3, and 4. Wah, wah. I forgot to mention that the only way you possibly could have heard of Babylon 5 nowadays is that Sheldon Cooper on Big Bang Theory hates it so much.
I hate it.
Yeah, it's brought up multiple times. It's Biscoff spread, not Breton cookie spread. Then you can find it's more easily available.
Say that again?
Biscoff cookie spread,
Biscoff
not
Biscoff is like the
Breton.
The brand?
Yeah, Biscoff. Okay. Yeah, you can find it. I think it's even at Kroger, too. My mom doesn't buy peanut butter anymore. She only buys Biscoff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the Doug Loves Movies episode from Nashville featured Bobby Lee, not Henry Lee, Jeff Tate, and Sam the Man Levine, a.k.a. Lil Wolverine. It was awesome. And I haven't actually listened to the podcast yet because I was on it, or I watched it.
It wasn't Jeff Tate from Queensryche, was it?
No.
Queensryche.
No, but he mentioned that, I think, at the thing that, he can't have his own website with his own name in it. Because of Queensryche.
He should have silentlucidity.com. That would be my Operation Mindcrime.
I yelled out 2 times, so I don't know if, I'm actually heard, but I was one of, 2 people in the audience who's ever heard of The Apple, a disco musical from 1980.
Canon film.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see the Go-Go Boys?
No,
you weren't there. They only had the Nashville Jewish Film Festival.
Oh.
They had a documentary, The Go-Go Boys.
I wanted to see that, but I missed it. Did you see it?
Yeah, I went to see it.
Ooh, was it good?
It was good, if you like that kind of thing. But I was hoping it would be more like Machete Maidens.
Yeah,
and really go in depth into it. It was kind of skim the surface.
Okay.
But I still enjoyed it, but I would have liked to have had interviews from the filmmakers of The Apple and, Missing in Action pictures.
they were
very quick.
They were all the action movies and stuff in the
80s. Yeah,
80s, stuff,
right? Ninja.
Yeah, Break Into Electric Boogaloo.
Oh.
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Bloodsport.
Yeah, Bloodsport, right.
I think they had the rights to make Spider-Man, maybe,
yes,
in the 80s?
Yes, they even had a poster. Yeah. They even showed one of the posters of it.
I remember reading that in a Bullpen's Bulletin.
Yeah, they made the He-Man movie, which was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the first films I saw as a kid that I realized that some movies could be bad.
Mm. Of course, they hadn't made that Hercules movie that I probably
mentioned. Oh, yeah. I still haven't seen that.
They threw the bear into the... And it turned into the star configuration. I thought, well, I'm out of here.
And
I think they got a Lombada movie, too. The Lombada.
The Forbidden
Lombada
Dance?
The Forbidden Dance, yeah.
They did that.
Yeah.
Those guys must have made a ton of money.
Yeah.
Factoid, Mobius's designs for Yoderowski's Dune, some of them actually went into the He-Man movie, Masters of the Universe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. His design for the Emperor is actually Skeletor. If you just look at Skeletor's costume in He-Man, Masters of the Universe, if it's that He-Man, but Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah,
Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, if you look at that the Skeletor costume, it's off the chart, and it's the thing that Mobius designed to be the emperor that Salvador Dali was supposed to play.
That makes it nearly cool.
I'm teasing my best movies of the year. All right, but for more information, you can get most of these movies. You can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam.
All right, next week we're taking off for Turkey Day. We'll be back December 3rd with our best books of the year. We're going to start a whole month of our best of the year picks. Jeez Louise, it's like we're doing a show.
Certain Archie comics.
Yeah. Friendship is magic.
There's a whole... I was watching Comic Book Man. There's like this fanaticism. With
bronies?
Bronies.
We've got a documentary about it called... I haven't seen it, but it's called Bronies. It's about
I've heard it's surprisingly good.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, it's I thought there was like an ironic thing. Or like maybe like, you know... They're actually genuinely... Like
they have conventions and stuff like that.
I read the most disturbing, one of the most disturbing comment wars I've ever heard of. I don't even know how I found it. It was these two dudes. One guy was on DeviantArt, and he was making like naughty My Little Pony art. And this one guy was replying saying that my wife, who is a character from My Little Pony, is offended by your art, and she. I'm disturbed by you drawing my beautiful stuffed animal wife who I've married in disturbing ways.
How dare you besmirch the good name of Fluttershy?
Yeah, something like that. I was like, I don't know.
Which one of those is more serious?
Yeah, I know.
It's like, okay, who's punking me?
Which one is more frightening, you know?
I checked out the book to show to my son, and he seemed to enjoy it, but he didn't.
I watched an episode, and I was like, this is kind of cool, but I mean, you know, I like it better if it was more goofy, ironic humor.
Yeah.
Like, genuine friendship is nice.
I think it's cool that John Delancey basically plays, like, the Q pony on the show.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah. Because he went and I saw him at a convention one time. He said that he recorded that and just forgot about it. It was just like another voiceover job that he did. And then after he aired, his inbox was like flooded with fan mail. And he's like, what happened? He was afraid he like offended someone on Twitter or something, right? Like put his foot in his mouth or something. And he was like, no, it was like.
He just put his hoof in his mouth.
His episode of My Little Pony had aired. And then the fan community is so like active and half of them were dorks who were into track and.
There's a confluence.
Yeah. And John Delancey played Q on Star Trek The Next Generation. And I think his character is like Q-esque on My Little Pony. So like a god-esque.
He had a nice arc on Breaking Bad, too. Mm-hmm.